Have you been searching for a podcast? Do you want to learn from some great content creators? Well, you've come to the right place. Indie Podcaster, with your host, Jeff Townsend, the Indie Podcast Father.
I'm Jeff Townsend, your host, and welcome to another episode of Indie Podcaster, the podcast where we talk to amazing content creators. We hear a little bit about their journey and they share some advice. You know, every week I find that I learn a little bit more, and I hope you do as well. This week, I'm going to share a conversation that I had with the Hall of Fame podcaster, Evo Terre. So I'm excited to let you hear his podcasting journey. It's a great conversation. He'll tell you that he's a podcast philosopher. So I ask him what that means to him and what things in podcasting that he sees, where he sees it going, and some things he'd like to see better. It's a really cool conversation. We're going to get to that in a second, but I do want to remind everybody that we have Podcasting Power Hour every Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern. If you have any questions or need any advice or want to talk podcasting, make sure you join us. Check on my Twitter page at podcast_father and get your spot, set your reminder, and we'll see you Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern. I do want to say one other thing here. There's this new feature on Twitter called Super Followers, and I was approved for that, and I've had people super following me for, I think, $2.99 a month. So if you appreciate the work that I'm doing, I'm by no means required or begging you to do it. But if you have the $2.99 a month to click the Super Follower button on Twitter, that would be sweet. With that being said, we're going to go through a few supporters of this podcast, then we'll jump into that awesome conversation with Evo. So let's take care of that business. These are great supporters of Indie Podcaster, and they make doing this podcast possible. They're great. Podden.io. Everybody should know that transcription for your podcast is not only fair, it can actually be used to make your podcast more discoverable. If you're not doing it, you need to consider using Podden. If you are currently transcribing, you still need to consider switching to Podden. They're the most accurate and easy service that I have used for this, and I truly mean that. You got to give it a shot. Use the code IndiePodcaster to receive 50% off your first month. Having a website for your podcast is absolutely critical. I understand how intimidating and challenging this seems, creating your website, because it really can be. But honestly, it doesn't need to be. PodPage makes this process super easy. You can create a beautiful podcast website in 5 minutes. 5 freaking minutes. It is that simple with PodPage. Let the team show you how easy this process can be. Use the code IndiePodcaster to receive $20 off any pro plan. Everyone knows how much I love being an indie podcaster, but as you know, everyone listening, I'm sure, it is hard to balance life, work, and being a content creator. It's a huge challenge that we all face, but I have found one way to make sure I have more time to focus on my content creating. I now have a podcast editor. I hired the great team at How's It Podcasting. The team at How's It Podcasting has done great work with it. They're reliable and extremely affordable. It gives me more time to focus on what is most important, creating the content. Find How's It Podcast Editing on any of their social media pages. That's How's It Podcast Editing. H-O-W-Z-I-T Podcast Editing. They're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Make sure you hit them up. All right, let's get to this awesome conversation, which happens to be powered by Boomcaster, which you'll hear more about later in this episode. Evo, I appreciate you taking the time to do this. We kind of set this up last moment, so it was really cool of you taking the time to do this. Like I said, we just threw these plans together in the last couple hours, so it's awesome, man.
You know, if you have an unstructured schedule, as I sometimes do on a Wednesday, opportunistic, serendipitous things like this can happen. So yeah, let's do it.
Well, we'll give you a minute to talk about yourself.
Only a minute?
Well, I was about to say, we could talk about the Hall of Fame career that you've had. We'll get into that later, but kind of a second to run through the basics, I guess. Then we can take a deep dive into the man, the myth, the legend known as Evo. So go ahead.
more mythical than anything else. So, well, again, thank you very much for having me on. For those who don't know me, hi, I'm Evo Terre. I've been podcasting since 2004. Yikes! Isn't that a very, very long time? I do a podcast called Podcast Pontifications, which is all about the future and present of podcasting in ways that podcasters like you and I can make podcasting better. And I'm also head of content for Sounds Profitable, a company that's grown big time over the last few years. And yeah, just generally a guy in the podcasting space.
Yeah, I remember meeting Brian. Oh, Ariel, I think, introduced us to each other like a year ago. And just to see the growth from a year ago even is incredible. So it's cool that you get to be a part of that.
Yeah, yeah, it has just skyrocketed from an offhand conversation that Brian and I had in February of 2020 at Podcast Movement Evolutions to a conversation a few hours later with James Cridland to the connections that were made. And now here we are with this big company on our hands. Like, it's weird how podcasting can grow that quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll probably ask more questions about that later. Sure. But how did you get into podcasting, man? Because let's go back in the past here, 2004.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that term was being dropped a whole lot. I certainly hadn't heard it at that on that year, yeah. Maybe a few years after I started hearing it.
Yep. Yeah. Now, 2004 was, you know, everybody counts differently and everybody's version of history is differently, but the kind of assumed and agreed upon understanding of when podcasting began was in the summer of 2004. Even though there had been some other stuff happening, I will not get into the splitting the hairs. We just say 2004, summer of 2004 is when Adam Curry and Dave, oh man, Dave Weiner. Thank you. I was too many Daves in my world these days. Yeah. Adam and Dave came up with the whole idea of podcasting really and put it forth and made all the connections really work together. And I did it like a few months after that. I was doing a radio show at the time, an internet radio show, which had, we enjoyed a very, very small terrestrial syndication, a relationship with maybe six different stations around the country. So we were already producing audio content. We were talking science fiction, so we had developed kind of a large-ish international audience, not just through the radio stations we were on, but through the website we had built. People were coming to our website and clicking on the real audio player to play the MP3 files that we had out. We already had a blog. We had RSS feeds. People were subscribed to it, so they would know when they need to go click and listen to the newest episode. So when we heard about podcasting in October of 2004, it was a relatively straightforward thing for me, a very poorly skilled developer, because I haven't been a developer since the Blink tag was deprecated. It's been a long time, but I was smart enough to be able to hack an enclosure tag into Movable Type, which was the blogging software we were using that predates WordPress, by the way. And so when we made our podcast officially live on October 14th, 2004, we had like 150 episodes in the can. So we cheated. They were all there and available. So we dropped with a pretty big splash in the extreme early days of podcasting so that, you know, everybody who was listening to podcasts listened to our show because there was, I think, 50 of us and we were all listening to everybody else's content. Those were definitely weird times.
It took a few years to get rid of that whole saying internet radio as well, because that lingered on for a while. It's kind of a generalization for podcasting as well. It's, from what I recall, when I first started creating content a few years after that, it was, they all generalize you as that.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, I don't know that that's a good thing or a bad thing. You know, I kind of think it doesn't really matter. I mean, because really podcasting today, and we could fight as many people do fight over the, you know, split the hairs over what the true definition is, but it's really content that is delivered to you via the internet. And while, you know, people like you and I probably use a dedicated podcast listening app, like I use Overcast, for example, or Fountain, there's a lot of great podcast apps out there. We also have apps like, you know, Spotify that will deliver audio content to you that doesn't necessarily have to have an RSS feed attached to it. So I try to stay out of those, what is the definition of a podcast conversations, because they're kind of boring to me. And I don't think the audience cares.
Yeah. Oh, no, they don't. That's not... not something to get too hung up on. And it's interesting that you're talking about RSS feed here, because 2004, before, like you said, you had to get everybody to your website.
Yeah.
And that's a whole battle of its own, right? It's evolved, obviously, since then. But the RSS feed piece, you had to have been, I'm not going to say one of a few people, but there weren't a lot of people that truly understood that and certainly able to code it and utilize it the way it is today back in 2004, 2005.
Yeah, it just wasn't as ubiquitous, right? I mean, you know, RSS 0.92, to be specific on the spec, you know, is from like the late 80s or 90s, I think, is when that first came out. And a handful of blogs, I mentioned Dave Weiner earlier, he had a service called Userland or Radio Userland, Userland Radio. I forget what it was. And it was an early blogging tool. And it had an RSS feed, which would output content. But there weren't a whole lot of RSS readers out there until Google Reader came along. And then there was an RSS reader everybody would actually use, or a lot of people were starting to use that. And then more sites started utilizing it. But there was really, I think RSS got big when WordPress hit, you know, and Matt Mullenweg introduced WordPress. And now everybody, as soon as you publish content, there was already an RSS feed in there. I mean, I remember back in the late 90s, early 2000s, helping doing some web development. And, you know, we had to convince developers to put an RSS feed out there. You know, every time the site's updated, there should be a feed that goes along with it. What? Why would we do that? Well, because it's going to be the way things are going to be consumed. And here we are, you know, podcasting is, its legacy was built on RSS. And while the technology might change at some point in time, it's probably here with us for a while.
Yeah, that's a whole argument of its own. I know we had I had Tanner Campbell on, and he was talking about, I guess you could say there's a lot of different opinions on RSS. You could go down a rabbit hole for a long time on that.
Yeah, we could. It works for what it does. I'm excited that the Podcast Index, Dave Jones and Adam Curry now are making some, finally, we're making some new namespace additions that are being adopted and really extending RSS. You know, 3 years ago, I was on the RSS is dead. We need a better format. And I'm completely over that now because we are really seeing extension inside the medium. So they've breathed new life into it, which is a very good thing.
Going back to that time period, 2004, 2005, then even when I started to give my first stab at it, there wasn't as many people available as there is today to, and resources available today is to kind of learn podcasting and get started on it, because there hadn't been a lot of people doing it, but there were still a few people that were really helpful for me, and I'm sure the same for you, but it's not like it was today. So talk to us about your kind of growing pains and that experience as far as getting started beyond just creating content, like the actual podcasting piece of it was different then.
Totally different then. We were literally making it up as we went along. You know, when we first launched back in October, we weren't using a podcast hosting company. We were just storing our MP3 files up on Bluehost or some other, you know, cheap, quote, unlimited, end quote, hosting company, when you quickly figured out what unlimited really means.
Yeah.
Until they start shutting servers down. And so, you know, and, you know, what ID3 tag should we use? You know, why is it when I pull my podcast up, it doesn't show an image, yet when I pull up the daily source code, it shows an image? There weren't any forums we could turn to. Well, we had like there was one big Google group that a lot of us were communicating on, the podcasters group. We were asking these questions back and forth, but all of us, we're discovering this stuff as we went along. And so I remember in late 2004, early 2005, when I was asked to write Podcasting for Dummies, my response was, how big of a book do you want this to be? I mean, maybe it's a pamphlet, just a handful of things. But yeah, once we started really getting into the meat of what it means to truly do this in a way you teach somebody else, it's like, oh my goodness, the rabbit hole is huge. And now there's this 300-page book that was put out all about the ways you can do things. And that really was only just scratching the surface. So I'm fortunate that in those early days, we were all very collaborative and talking to one another and making discoveries. But today, 18 years later, there are plenty of pros that you can turn to and say, hey, how do I do that? And you don't have to have a discussion about it. It's just simply, these are the answers, or at least this is one answer, and hopefully it's a way you can get it done.
Yeah. And there's great resources, like you said, even just outside of pros, just instructional videos and stuff. You know, everybody has their own opinion on what's right and wrong, but nevertheless, there's a lot more resources.
Yeah, it's easier now to get started than it ever was before, that is sure. And tomorrow, it's going to be even easier because it's just going to continue that way.
So before we kick things off, we only have to do it the right way. Let's just get the sponsor of this episode going here. Tell us about yourself, Greg. Tell us what you offer, pal.
Yeah, so if you're a true crime, paranormal, scary, or comedy podcaster, and you're looking to grow your show, you can submit an episode to Indie Drop-In. We will play the full episode of your show to an embedded base of listeners looking for your content. Then, if they like you, they'll follow you. And guess what? It's 100% free. I actually pay Tanner and Jeff to get your content. If you can believe that. I don't know how I got roped into being the creator of Indie Drop-In, but I will like to promote your show. How was that, Jeff?
That's good. Tanner, what do you think?
I think you did a better job than I do.
Definitely does a better job than I do. I can hardly even talk.
Yeah. Well, no, I think you do a great job. I've heard your ads so many times that now I just replay them in my head. But for anyone interested in submitting a show, just go to indiedropin.com/creators. Just follow the form and I'll take it from there.
How long into podcasting would, because you were in on it so early, would you say that you thought like, wow, we're really onto something here with the content we're creating?
Yeah. So I've been through up and downs on that, to be honest with you. It was by no means a linear path. Very excited in the early days. I mean, so excited that within the first year of getting, you know, making that first podcast available, we'd built a podcast network. We invited 5 or 6 different shows to join us on that network, and we're really enjoying all of the cross-promotional opportunities that still exist today when you form a network of like-minded people. It was probably maybe 2 or 3 months after that that I started an entire business, if you will, called PodioBooks.com that was designed to help the independent author use podcasting as a way to get distribution, because that is well before the such thing as an Amazon Kindle. All books were in hardcover right then. So it was very exciting to me, the opportunities of what podcasting could be from 2004 through like 2008, 2009. And then to be honest, I kind of grew weary of it. I'd left some of the podcasts I started. I left that network that I had begun. I was still running PodioBooks.com, but by then the Amazon Kindle was out. And so it was less, you know, what's more work? Writing a book and editing that book and then sitting down for the 50 plus hours to narrate that book in the individual chapters and figure out what this podcasting thing is, or write your book and just hit the button that uploads it automatically to Amazon. That's what people started doing, right? We just got a lot less of that. So it really went down from there. I got excited about it again around the 2015, 2016 mark. I saw lots of businesses entering the space. They weren't necessarily producing the most amazing content, but they certainly were utilizing the medium to meet business goals. And I'm an old, you know, business strategy guy from way back. And so that spoke really well to me. So that was exciting, because now it's not necessarily about having a blockbuster hit. Now it's using this technology to communicate with just the people who want to listen to it. So that was fun. And that was exciting. Yeah. So for me, it's been this roller coaster ride of up, down, and I'm definitely in the upside of things today.
Yeah, I think the timeline you're talking about kind of matches up with when podcasting kind of plateaued, you know, like leveled out. Because you get to 2008, 2009, you could start to see where there wasn't as much growth, right?
Yeah.
Then you jump ahead to like 2014, even Apple integrates it onto smart devices. And a lot of things were happening that kind of helped the discoverability of podcasts, because everybody wants to talk about how that's an issue now. But the world before then is a whole other topic. But it lined up with your timeline that you're saying here. So it sounds like you kind of got back into it when podcasting kind of had that next big ramp up, when some of the technology, as far as some of the people distributing the podcast, advanced.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. You know, one of the great things about being involved so early in podcasting is I knew all the players that are still around today as they were trying to build their networks. Like Rob Walsh and I knew each other before we started working at Libsyn. Todd Cochran and I knew each other before he even built Blueberry. You know, all of these things happened. And so those people I'm still connected to today, and we still communicate, and was communicating through this entire 18-year period. So even though my own interest in podcasting was waxing and waning at different times, my connections with those people remain. So I'd see the comments that they would have. So I guess that's, again, with one of the benefits of being early is I was able to keep an eye on this space that I've grown a little out of love with, to quickly fall back into it. It's not like I just dropped everything and ran away. But again, I credit that to being involved early and making the kind of friends I did with the original players out there.
And you mentioned it earlier, that's also when businesses really started getting into it and continue to do so even more today. That was also a big thing when I can use this to grow my pre-existing business. This just isn't going to be my business. I can use it to grow my already their business, if that I'm putting it in simple terms, but
yeah, really. I mean, I think that's it. You know, it's content marketing for a lot of businesses. And I have worked with enough businesses through all of the crazes. You know, I was there just getting into web development when a lot of businesses noticed that when the phone company would drop off phone books at apartment buildings, you know, they just drop a pallet of phone books is how they used to do it at the mailboxes of an apartment building. And within a day, they were all gone. As people go, oh, I need to pick up my new version of the phone book. Well, you know, around 2004, or you know, in the late 90s, I guess I should say, early 2000s, that stopped. You know, those phone books continue to pile up and pile up and pile up. And businesses says, how are people finding what local businesses to do? Well, they're using the internet, right? I mean, that's what they were doing. So suddenly, all businesses, even small businesses, needed to have some sort of a web presence. Fast forward again, 10 years later, and corporations are walking through the halls, noticing that their employees aren't necessarily working. They're on Facebook, or even before that, they were on MySpace, and they're doing other sorts of social media things during their day, and they weren't reading their emails quite as much, and they weren't, you know, going and looking for websites. They were getting information from these companies on social media. So every business, even small business, said, we have to have a social media strategy. Well, fast forward 10 years later after that, and I saw the same things in around 2016 of businesses seeing that podcasting is continuing to grow. You know, what is it? 78% of the population right now know what a podcast is, and over 50% listen to them, you know, at least once a month. And so businesses couldn't ignore that anymore and said, okay, I guess we need to have a podcast. So it's just paying attention to those waves. And I've been fortunate that I've been writing all of them.
Yeah, it's probably, and you kind of touched up on it, but the internet itself and the advancements in search engines and all that also ramped up then. And it kind of became the perfect scenario for the industry, honestly. I don't know if perfect, but definitely certainly a better scenario to succeed in.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. It would have been hard to do it without all those other great innovations that came before, for sure.
Let me ask you something, Eva. So you're an old school, you said you had an old school type of approach, and there's a lot of people in the space that do, but they really struggle with the way things have changed and kind of adapting to that. How do you look at that for yourself? Because I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. I'm not pointing anybody out directly. I'm not. But I'm just saying there, you've had to adapt, but yet keep your core principle values that you developed then. Has that been hard?
Not really. Not for me, at least, although I certainly do know that it is hard for people. I'm one of those weirdos that likes change. I kind of dig uncertainty. And if I'm not challenged with something new, some new problem to solve every 6 months or so, I'm going to grow bored. I don't like complacency whatsoever. So I guess it's good news that I've been working in the digital space since the late 90s, because it's changing. It's changing all the time. But you're right. Some of that change, and the change of what we think of, you know, about what is a podcast and what's appropriate content to be distributed on a podcast. And now with so many giant corporations having an interest in the business side of podcasting, what does that mean for the independent podcaster? And where does this struggle connect to? And how can all of that? So if you are still holding in your head the thoughts about podcasting as that you thought that it was perfect in 2006, it's not. You're missing a lot. It has changed a lot in the last 16 years. Hell, it's changed a lot in the last 3 years. I mean, yeah. It is an ever-evolving medium, faster and faster all the time. And I don't see that slowing down anytime real soon.
I agree 100%. And I think that I'm not one to really put too many rules on podcasting. I think it's kind of a waste of energy and time. Let's say you.
Yeah. You know, to me, some of us have this nostalgic view of podcasting, as I mentioned previously. I think some of us are just fans of the medium, podcasting. But when you look at things from the listener's point of view, and I said this earlier, I don't think listeners care all that much about the transmission process. They care about the content that they're listening to, and they care that they were able to find something that they wanted to listen to. And we can have arguments of how successful those two ends of it are and how much better they could be made. But the stuff in the middle doesn't really matter. You know, I think the people who are fans of podcasting are you and me and people like us. We're fans of podcasting. But for listeners, they're fans of the content they listen to. I read a whole lot of books. Does it mean I'm a fan of the publishing industry? You know, I watch a whole lot of movies. Am I a fan of the television industry? No, I'm a fan of the content that I'm watching. And I think it's the same for listeners. And I think we shouldn't forget that. And like you said earlier, let's not put rules around it. As long as it is content that the consumer is enjoying, that is going to their mobile device today, or now it's going to smart speakers or other times, why not? I mean, why would you try and limit that? What's the point in trying restricting that? I would take a much broader approach.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And yeah, the definition of podcasting, getting caught up and all that is absolutely silly. What's right or wrong, or at the end of the day, like, it's going to be what people enjoy. And that's different for everybody. But nevertheless, there's some that enjoy some things more than others. Then there's some that just a few people enjoy. That can still be considered good content that's being created.
Boy, to me, I think that's the key of podcasting. You can make a show that 7 people are in love with, or 2 people are in love with, or even 1 person is in love with. And if that does it for you and does it for them, then that's good enough.
Jeff Townsend here, and I'm excited to talk to my good friend Mark Binder. I'm just kidding. His name is Mark Binder. He doesn't like it when I say that. Mark is the creator. I'm going to say owner just because it sounds entrepreneur-y of Podtrix, the podcast hosting platform. Thanks for joining us, man. I'm excited to hear about this new Podtrix feed import feature that you're going to share with me and everybody, the world. Share it with the world, Mark.
World, behold this. The Podtrix feed importer, it's really simple. The Podtrix feed importer is really exciting because it's how you migrate your existing podcast feed to Podtrix hosting. All you got to do is the URL that you would submit to Spotify or Apple or Overcast or whatever, you paste that into the little pop-up that shows up in your show and you say import. The system then goes and will start importing all of your episodes, whether it be 10 episodes or 10,000 episodes. It will pull in every single episode, all the audio, your descriptions, your categories, everything is moved into Podtrix seamlessly and is ready for publishing. This feature is already live right now and is available to anybody who wants to use it.
So what we're really here, this is like the big coming out party for all you current podcasters to come on over and check out Podtrix, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Everybody's welcome.
You do offer something to the listeners of this podcast.
If you use the code IndiePod during checkout, you'll get 25% off your first 3 months of Podtrix.
That's a good deal.
I'm here to support you guys to be creative. You can contact me by sending an email to hello@podtrix.com. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Well, I encourage everybody to go on to podtrix.com right now and check it out and use the promo code IndiePod to get a little bit of a discount.
A very good friend of mine, Dave Slusher, has been podcasting for a little bit longer than me. He was also inducted into the Hall of Fame earlier this year, along with me. I remember Dave saying a long time ago on one of his episodes of The Evil Genius Chronicles, he was asking a question of, how big do you need your audience to be? And I think the way he asked it was, he may not have used the exact terms, but what's the minimum number of listeners that you, the podcaster, will be happy with? Is it 100,000? Is it 1,000? Is it 100? Is it 10? You know, what's the number that's happy for you? And Dave gave his own answer. He said, my minimum number is 1. And he said, he himself, was that one person. As long as he enjoys making it, then he's going to keep doing it because chances are somebody else out there would also like it. But even if not, it's good therapy for him. So yeah, make it. You don't have to have a giant blockbuster. You can have something that's successful on its own terms. That's okay.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think of when I first heard this analogy and people getting caught up on the numbers and like the number of downloads and all that, or you know, unique, however you want to look at it. Just imagine being in a room and let's say you get like, 200 downloads, an episode or something. Imagine being in a room in front of 200 people speaking. That's pretty legitimate to be a speaker in front of 200 people.
Yeah. If I could show up at my local library or community center every Thursday at 2 p.m. and 20 people were waiting for me, I would make that every single time, right? And that's just so exciting, you know, to know that many people are listening in on you. And now with podcasting, they don't have to be there at 2 p.m. on a Thursday, right? And the great thing about our medium is it's still very much on your own time. You know, it's whenever it works for you. And that's great. I think that's going to be hard to beat anytime real soon.
You call yourself a podcaster, you know, podcasting philosopher. Hmm. Talk to me about what that means to you. And how long ago did you start realizing that? And how long did it take? And what are some of the things that go into that terminology when you're using that? Because I've always been curious of that myself. Like, what does that mean to you?
So I picked that moniker for myself. And yeah, I'm that vain. I can do that. And I did that fairly early on. You know, so I've been podcasting for the longest time, but I started Podcast Pontifications, which, as I mentioned earlier, is a show about the present and future of podcasting. And I wanted to do a show. Well, I shouldn't say that. About 3 months into doing the show, I figured out what I wanted it to be. You know, there are a lot of shows out there that interviewed podcasters like we're doing right now, and those are wonderful. There were lots of shows out there that focused on how to get started in podcasting. There were even other shows that taught very specific how-to things in a niche, but I didn't want to do that. I wanted to do something different. While there were a lot of people who were talking about the future of podcasting and ways to make podcasting better, which is kind of the thing I focus in on, there wasn't a centralized place to do that. Nobody was doing that more than anything else. And so I said, that's it. Because honestly, I really do want to make podcasting better. All of the advancements in podcasting since 2004, I shouldn't say all, most podcasting advancements since 2004 have made it easier to podcast, but not all of them have made it better. to make a podcast. And we need easier. We need it, but we also need better. And so that's how podcast pontifications very quickly evolved into that. I want to talk about ways. And that to me is a very philosophical approach. It's less how to and more why and what are we doing and have we thought about this way? So it's probably a little bit of a grab to say philosophy around that, but it certainly is deeper thinking and more questions that should be answered to figure out how can we all do this together and make podcasting better. And I still think about that most of the time. I mean, what's what I'm thinking about is, you know, what's coming next for podcasting? I'm not saying I have all the answers. I do have a lot of the questions. So we'll see.
And I think that all really connects to what's most important. A lot of listeners of this podcast are pretty damn new content creators. All right.
Yeah.
And I talk to them all day, every day, particularly online on a platform like Twitter. A lot of DMs going back and forth. And the concern seems to be ahead of the content that they're creating itself, usually. It's equipment or it's a bunch of other things instead of the most important thing, which is the content you're creating. Am I connecting the dots as well with this philosophical approach? Sometimes in podcasting, we lose, and people like you and I who talk about podcasting, we can almost lose sight of that if we're not careful. So to me, that's important when I'm working with somebody that's new, is them coming to the realization of that, just to be honest, because people try to get way ahead of themselves.
Yeah, I think people get caught up in trying to solve problems that aren't really problems, right? And it's particularly vexing, I think, for people that are brand new to the space. I mean, do they need this $400 microphone that is connected by a $50 cable that goes into this $300 audio interface and all that? And the answer is no, right? I mean, the best microphone to use for your podcast is the one that you own and know how to use properly. But both those parts are very important, not just the first one, right? Know how to use it. So yeah, they have a difficult time just really getting started because there's so much information out there. There's so many things to do. And they typically are thinking more about those tactical decisions first and then sitting down to the studio going, oh shit, what am I going to talk about? Right? How can I make something actually going to sound good? So that's a problem on their end. But there's also a problem. Oh, and before I back up from that, you mentioned earlier, these are new people. The latest data that I've shown shows that 50% or more of the podcasts that are being produced today are made by people who've been at it for less than 6 months to a year. More than half are brand new to this. So there is always going to be information, all people asking what microphone, what interface, what software, what hosting company, all of those things will continue. But it's also a vexing problem for people who've been doing it for a while, whether it's 3 years or 13 years or 20 years, you know, that you've been doing this, there's always the question of what's coming next. What can you do better that goes beyond buying a different microphone? I won't even say better. You know, switching hosting companies, I see this all the time. Young podcasters say, which hosting company is going to give me the best listenership, whatever. It's like, you realize that's not the job of the hosting company. Yeah. If it changes because of the way we'll account stats, it's not that big of a deal. So I didn't want to do that. It was more of a question of, back to your idea of getting ahead of themselves. Yeah, right. And thinking about the more fundamental thing. So yeah, everybody might have an answer on which podcast microphone they should buy. But why aren't they asking questions like, what sort of contact information should I have on my website so that people can actually reach me? It's still maddening to me. Somebody will say something, I'll go to their podcast and listen to it, and I want to reach out to them. And like, there's no contact information. There's no way to subscribe. There's no way to follow. We're only sharing out Apple Podcast links. You know, all these fundamental mistakes that we continue to make over and over again. There's a lot of things to talk about there. And I think those are less checkmark, and some of them are much more of a having a better, more holistic view of podcasting in total. It doesn't just stop when you upload your file to your hosting company. There's more to do. And I think I want to keep shining the light on that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that camp for sure, because like you said, it's really easy to get caught up in all the shit that's pushed upon us as content creators, or just in general, right? You can't watch television or anything without having something shoved down your throat, but it's easy to get lost in all that. And I think that's where I'm on the same page as you. It's really about focusing on the most important thing. That's the content that you're creating.
Yeah, it certainly is. Making sure that content matches with what your audience wants. How do you understand what your audience wants? All of those things, you know, that's a much more interesting conversations than whether or not, you know, I should use episode numbers in my title descriptions or not.
Yeah. You've been at this for a while, obviously. Not going to call you that guy, but The just for men guy, you know, using dyeing the beard or the hair, whatever you got to do. No, I'm just kidding. You made some great relationships, though, man. I see the connection that you have to a couple people that, you know, I have been lucky enough to connect with and get to know a little bit, like Mark Asquith, Brian Barletta. I mean, so that's got to be the big takeaway also at the end of the day for you, is just the relationships that you've made.
Super important. And I credit the vast majority of my success to those relationships. But I will share one thing with you. I hate networking events. I mean, I definitely hate them. I'm not a good networker. I go to various meet and greets or things like that that I've been invited to, and I just don't talk to a lot of people because I find them rather repulsive. That's the wrong word. I find them rather desperate, I think, is the way to do that. But one of the things that has always been true, at least in my experience for the Podosphere, is that the people who are making great content and are the thought leaders and the industry leaders, they are all incredibly approachable. You know, be smart about that. You don't want to be that guy at the party that just runs over because the cool kids are talking in the corner and start injecting yourself into the conversation. That's not going to end well for you. But by and large, it's not always the rule, but it is mostly the rule. The people who are the movers and shakers, if you will, in podcasting are open and receptive. You can have a conversation with most of them. You can send them a DM if their DMs are open and say, hey, can we have a talk on the phone? And they'll probably say yes. And cultivate those relationships is a super smart thing with the super smart people. I mean, I think that's what led me to have the success I have had so far, is I connect with the right people. I genuinely enjoy connecting with them, and we just keep the conversation going. We can all learn from each other.
Most of you listening to this are aware that I have a different conversation that I share every single episode. Well, I've discovered an amazing tool that's helping me do that in the best quality, simplistic, great way possible. Boomcaster. I've recently made this big change and I was a little nervous at first, but I'm so glad that I did because it's been an amazing experience. If you don't know what Boomcaster is, you really got to look into this, because if you are frequently recording conversations on some platform like Zoom, it's just not designed for that. And I'll explain. Boomcaster is actually designed for content creators, podcasters. You can schedule, stream, and record all from one platform. They are just dedicated to indie podcasters and independent content creators. They deliver studio quality audio and video every time, all the time. You can record and live stream to reach the biggest audience possible. Let me explain why you got to get caught up with the times here. Traditional conferencing solutions rely on network speed for each participant. That is not the case with Boomcaster. It saves locally and uploads to the cloud, giving you the freedom to record from anywhere. And that's significant as far as the audio delay and all those things that you experience when you're creating content and recording. Like I said, I know the people at Boomcaster personally, and I vouch for them. They support us indie podcasters. We need to support the independent creators like them. It's time to upgrade to Boom. And you know what? If you use the code IndiePodcaster at checkout, you'll get your 30 days free plus 50% off your first 3 months. That's incredible. If you want to legitimize the content you are creating, you've got to use Boomcaster. Yeah, and I think it's when you get in with a group of people that have a common belief, you know, for example, would be the focus isn't right or wrong. The focus should be innovation. And that's where right. You're starting to see some of these, even these things that you're a part of or you've been associated with are pulling ahead, right? Like Captivate. Then we talk about sounds profitable. The growth there, we mentioned that earlier. Innovation is absolutely critical for this industry.
It is, because as I said earlier, and we're both agreeing with, you know, the change is rapid in this industry. And what is the right way to do things today will be probably different tomorrow. Someone's going to make an acquisition. Someone's going to make a new invention. Who knows what it's going to be, but it's going to change fundamentally the way that we think about podcasting. And as an individual, I can't even keep track of all that. It's just impossible to do so. So you have to rely on other people that you're connected to and keep up with them in a non-creepy fashion so that you can figure out, you know, what are their passions? What are they into more so that you can absorb that information as well? Yeah.
I have a lot of people ask me, there's actually, or what the hell is the Podcasting Hall of Fame? And you had the honor of being inducted into it. So how deep of a meaningful purpose to be involved in a class like that is that to you? What does it mean to you?
It was an extremely great honor, and I'm still humbled and excited that it finally happened. You know, I've known about the Podcasting Hall of Fame since it got started in 2015. I was going through the roster of people who've been inducted, and I am personal friends with about half of them. And again, that is not, I'm not bragging about that. It's just a lot of the people that are in there were also early adopters in the space, or were doing something quite innovative that I found interesting, and we struck up a conversation, and we're still friends today. So just being a part of that group who've been recognized by their peers of people who are worthy of it is, it's an honor beyond words. And I'm so thrilled that I was inducted this year into the Hall of Fame.
Does it make you feel like the years of work you put into the industry itself really paid off?
Yes. I hesitate when I answer that question is I think it's not the only thing that's caused that to happen, but it is a nice acknowledgement. It is an indication and one more thing to put up on there. So yeah, it's great. I certainly don't want to diminish it. It was wonderful to stand up on stage with other presenters and be honored and awarded and the accolades that have come from that. So yeah, it is, you know, as they say with, you know, when they get the Oscar, you know, it's nice to be recognized by the peers. It is a wonderful accomplishment. And to be a part of that crew, that class, and the entire cohort of honorees is quite fantastic.
I could talk to you all day, but I am going to ask you a couple more questions, man. And
no problem.
I'm going to set some rules to your answers here. So the question that I'm going to ask you, it's a two-part question. What are you excited about up and coming in the podcast industry? And then what is one thing that you are not a fan of, or you'd like to see go, or you don't think will last? And I'll set the rules here. Okay. The thing you're looking forward to, I'd like you to explain what you've recently really, I'm going to say recent, but you got involved in with Sounds Profitable. You know, Tom is on board now. Mm-hmm. Get that out of the way. But then something else that you're looking forward to. Then my rule for the other question is, don't talk about Acast spamming, because I've heard enough of that to last me a lifetime.
Yeah, no, I will not. No, we will not talk about Acast. I'm forbidden from talking about Acast. So you'll have to erase the two times I've mentioned Acast. Shit, now it's three. No, I'm kidding. All right. So the thing that I'm excited about from the point of view of Sounds Profitable, and just for edification of the handful of people who are unaware of it, Sounds Profitable started life as a newsletter devoted towards exploring podcast advertising technology, written by Brian Barletta. It has now expanded greatly to cover more of the business of podcasting. Recently, we welcomed Tom Webster, who was, for the last 18 years, the Senior Vice President of Edison Research, the company behind the Infinite Dial, the report that podcasters and others wait for every year and base our entire lives on.
Yep.
Tom left Edison and is now joined as a partner at Sounds Profitable, which has allowed us at Sounds Profitable to launch a research arm. And so we're going to be doing similar things, in fact, oftentimes in partnership with Edison, to bring out additional information that has not yet been shared all about podcasting, and not just about the advertising side of podcasting, but all of podcasting involved. Like at the end of June 2022, as opposed to, I don't know when this is going to be released, but at the end of June, we're going to have our first webinar. Our first study is called The Creators, and it's the first ever credible look at people like you and me who make podcasts, right? We know who you know who you are. I know who I am. But what about everybody else? So we've got some great data that's never been shared publicly before, and I've seen it already, and it's really fantastic. I think it's going to open up a lot of eyes and make people really see what's happening there. And we've done so much more with Sounds Profitable. You know, now we're putting out a weekly roundup of the news that's most important to the people that work in the business of podcasting, called The Download. And we've got so many more things planned with that. So lots of things happening from Sounds Profitable. That was part one of part one. Part two is the thing I'm most interested in that's not all of those things is something I wasn't interested in 6 months ago, video. You know, I've been around long enough to see video come and go.
Yeah.
If you go back in time to 2005, 2006, a lot of video podcasts existed. The top 10 list of on iTunes back in the day, now Apple Podcast, at least two or three of them were a video podcast. Happy Tree Friends and Ask a Ninja and some of the other classic things now that are still making appearances on Adult Swim and stuff were video podcasts. And then video podcasts went away for all points and purposes. I mean, there were still a handful out there, but it just wasn't supported as much as it was, or as much as it used to be back then. But now we're seeing a shift in that. Spotify now is hosting and playing videos right through there. Apple always has. YouTube, any day now, probably right around podcast movement. And August, if I had to guess, is going to be announcing some things that are saying you can now host audio podcasts on YouTube. That's my assumption. I don't know anything specifically. So video is coming. And I think that people like me who've been podcasting as an audio first medium, we're going to have to change our tunes. we're going to have to realize that we probably, as I said in a recent post on Podcast Pontifications, stop asking the question of whether or not you should put a video out for your podcast and start thinking about why aren't you? Is there a significant reason why you are not doing it? And it's too hard is not a good enough answer. So I think we're all going to have to come to terms with the new wave of podcast consumers are going to be expecting video as well. And when they don't see it, they're going to wonder why. So I'm excited about video. What was the second part? Remind me again. I went so long-winded on those things. Oh, what should we stop
doing?
The
A word. The A word. Yeah.
What am I done talking? What am I done seeing out there? I'm going to be a little curmudgeon-y about this, but I'm done talking about crypto and NFTs. Seriously am. I'm really done about seeing how those things work in the podcasting space. They might one of these days, but they're certainly not anytime real soon. So I'm a fan of the value for value model that Podcast Index has. In fact, my shows, you can hand me a handful of Satoshis if you wish to as they're streaming. I think NFTs are largely a scam today, honestly. I haven't seen a lot of good utility. I think there are some possibilities out there, but I just haven't seen it yet. So yeah, if we could move away from the crypto bro talk, that'd be good for me.
Crypto bro. You know, Ivo, I'll be honest with you, man. I didn't expect that to be the answer, but
no.
Nevertheless, there is a big, I don't want to say movement because it's not, there's not much moving right now with it, but there's a lot of discussion going on with that as it relates to podcasting. So especially in the last couple of weeks. So it's interesting that you bring that up.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, I could be on the wrong side of that. Wouldn't be the first time I was wrong, but we'll see.
Yeah. It's like, you know, talking with Albin, a Buzzsprout, his big, bold Facebook podcasting success predictions and how that just fell through the cracks and they abandoned ship on it. But it goes to show you, like, no matter where we're at in industry or we're working for the industry or creating content, it's hard to exactly, or what knowledge you have, it's hard to predict what the next fad will be with podcasting.
Yeah, we don't know. I mean, we really, really don't know. That's why I try to have my interests covered in lots of different fields, because when something goes bad, I don't have all my eggs in that basket. There are other interesting things out. So my hit record looks better than it is because I ignore my losses.
Yeah, that's part of it too. That's part of succeeding when you're doing this or anything in life, really. It's really getting past the losses and not getting caught up on it and continuing to learn and grow. And that's what's critical in this space. And that's why, you know, you're so valuable, Ivo. And I think I can speak for myself and a lot of other people around there saying thank you for what you do, because people like yourself are important to the industry and the content creators that are the biggest part of the industry.
Well, thank you, Jeff. I appreciate those accolades. Very well said. And thank you.
Well, on a closing note here, I'll give you some time to talk about where to find all the awesome stuff that you're doing.
Yeah. So I have fairly concentrated these days. If you want to follow me on social media, there's really only one social media platform I pay any attention to at all, and that is Twitter. Twitter is still a great place for podcasters to exchange lots and lots of ideas. Not the only place, lots and lots of places, but yeah, follow me on Twitter where I am at EvoTerra. And if you have not yet experienced the magic and joy that is Podcast Pontifications, I would encourage you to do so. PodcastPontifications.com. You can get the episodes. They're only about 10 minutes long. And also I write a complete article based on the words I said out loud in the episode every single week. And that gets posted on the website as well as published out on a free newsletter. So if you're busy and you'd rather subscribe to my written words, feel free. All that's available at PodcastPontifications.com.
Of course, I'll have all that great stuff in the show notes. And again, man, I appreciate you taking the time to have this conversation with me.
You are quite welcome. Thanks again. And let's go make some great stuff happen in the world of podcasting. All right.
I feel you there. Let's do it. Thanks for listening. And thanks for telling a friend. But more importantly, thank you for supporting independent content creators. If you're enjoying the podcast or like the work we're doing in the indie podcaster community, I ask you to tell just one fellow content creator that hasn't heard of this podcast or the work we're doing and share it with them. But more importantly, I hope you continue with me on this journey as the indie podcaster. Keep being you. Keep being great. And the question is, do I stay here? Will you be back? Are you gonna come back? Will you be back? Are you coming back?